This is the Quality News Network. The White House says it's moving swiftly to replace World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz, who announced he would resign in June. Top contenders include former Trade Chief Robert Zoellick and current Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. President Bush's nominee must be confirmed by the World Bank's board. In Washington, Democratic senators have called for a non-binding no-confidence vote in an attempt to convince Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to resign, despite President Bush's continuing support for his old friend. An increasing number of lawmakers from both parties say Gonzalez's actions have injured the credibility of the Justice Department. Monday, the Senate begins debating a bipartisan immigration bill, tentatively approved by the White House. The deal announced yesterday provides a guest worker program, fortified borders, and a controversial path for illegal immigrants seeking legal status. The Israeli Air Force launched attacks against the Gaza Strip this morning, specifically targeting Hamas. At least 11 people were killed. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas canceled a visit to Gaza after it was revealed Hamas was plotting to assassinate the moderate Fatah leader. Clashes between the two factions this week have killed nearly 50 and wounded at least 100. 84% of Americans say they have a favorable view of the U.S. military, despite negative views of the Iraq War. In Baghdad last night, two ABC journalists were ambushed and killed on their way home from work. 143 reporters have been killed and another 48 kidnapped since the U.S.-Iraq invasion in 2003. In Thailand, the military-led government has cracked down on 3,000 community radio volunteers and stations for airing comments from Thailand's ousted premier, now exiled in London. Radio station operators who are found to be guilty of broadcasting interviews of opposition politicians face 5 years in prison. In Paris, newly elected French President Nicolas Sarkozy today announced his 15-person ministerial cabinet. The team includes 7 women and Doctors Without Borders founder Bernard Kouchner as foreign minister. In Boston, lawmakers are considering becoming the nation's second state to ban discrimination against people because of height or weight.
Hi, I'm George Lopez. In comedy, there are some things you can count on to get a smile. In healthcare, Shriners Hospitals for Children have a proud tradition of bringing smiles to kids with orthopedic burn and spinal cord problems. The Shriners offer world-class medical care to children absolutely without charge. At all 22 Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized pediatric services for one purpose, to improve the lives of children. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
There was this man who almost learned to walk at a rehab center that almost got built by people who almost gave. How good is almost giving? About as good as almost walking. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. Don't almost give. Give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Ornithologists are warning the West Nile virus is destroying large flocks of common American birds such as robins and chickadees. Hardest hit are crows, whose population has dropped 45%. The virus can be transmitted to humans through mosquito bites. In Potsdam, Germany today, G8 leaders begin a 2-day meeting to address the security of international financial institutions, tightening regulations governing hedge funds, and alleviation of poverty in Africa. Department store Kohl's profits jumped nearly 25% in its latest quarterly report. Kohl's credited the introduction of clothing and accessories from high-end designer Vera Wang. Robust April sales for its TurboTax and QuickBooks software increased Intuit's quarterly profits. Shares rose 6%. The Wall Street Journal reports Saudi Arabian industrial giant Basic Industries is in talks to buy General Electric's plastics divisions. The price tag under discussion is about $11 billion. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.85 a barrel. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 49 points, the NASDAQ is up 8, the S&P 500 is up 4. Gold is trading at $658.10 an ounce. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up for a Friday morning. How you doing? How you doing? It's a very kind of special situation over here at the Sydney Studios here for the Head On Radio Network. If you were around for Cup of Joe, you would have known. My good friend Scott Berry's hanging out at the studio because, hey, you know, it's Friday night here. Y'all are just, like, way behind schedule. Most of y'all are just getting out of bed. But see, here it's, you know, it's way past midnight. It's 1 a.m. now. But, you know, like I was saying during the Cup of Joe show, I was really amazed at the reaction that I got about that whole solar pump geothermal open source project that I was going on about yesterday. And it's a fascinating thing, and its viability right here, right now, I mean, it's completely realistic, just makes it an amazingly unique opportunity. But Bob and I were talking a few hours ago, my today, his yesterday, and he said, but how, you know, there's still the coal and oil interest to get around. How do you get around it? You know, because he was saying, and this is where just, you know, it's bang your head into the wall stuff. You know, West Virginia has quite a bit of wind generation, I understand, and it actually works really well there. But yet, Bob and Agnes Kincaid can't actually buy that wind power for their home in West Virginia that is generated in West Virginia. No, it's piped off to New Jersey. It's piped off to a couple of other states, I understand. And so you have these power companies who look at it at this kind of technology as being their demise. But why isn't it that, you know, they already have the infrastructure in place for half of it anyway? Why are they not looking at it from the standpoint that it is their future? And yeah, you know, there's and the people that fight against wind power, like, I just, it's one of those ones that I don't understand, you know? It's like, what could your problem be? You know, it just doesn't make any. That's just one of those that I'm kind of speechless, because there is no response. It's just kind of so. I really think it's so ridiculous when you look at the reality. Now, you know, you don't want them right in your backyard, but you know they're usually out in the middle of somewhere, and it's technology that for the most part works, but. But again, that's where I think, again, this system that we've been talking about, you know, we're talking about yesterday, is so important that it eliminates the need for any more of that. So that argument goes away. And the other argument with wind power is that it's not consistent, which is true. Well, yeah. But that's again why this spegs, you know, if the wind stops, yeah, there's nothing with, and grid power, you can't store the charge. It's a maintenance thing. It's maintaining within parameters. And, you know, so it's a constant kind of like tuning operation on where you tune your supply to the demand that's out there. And so you need good baseload power. So this system allows for that. But then Bob's got this great argument, though, that at the moment you have stupid laws like this. Tony Blair ran into it trying to put solar panels on his big place in the UK. Al Gore had the same thing happen when he tried to do them on his property, you know. And it's just kind of the stupidity. But here's where my response to it was. That is where, in the United States, just because that's where the conversation was pointed at, and as well here in Australia because of the timing, it's going to be the next president that has the last chance for the real opportunity to take leadership on the issue. And until that happens, until, you know, national governments... actually set up some definitive, you know, goals. Business doesn't know where they're supposed to shoot for, and they've been saying this. You know, I've seen plenty of interviews, and there's been like a group of like 10 or 12 companies in the United States that just testify before Congress saying, you know, come on, tell us what, give us. The benchmarks, and then we can plan our infrastructure investment changes planning accordingly. And they're just they're saying we don't, and you know, if they have to be strong, that's fine. We just got to know what they are. And I think that's something that needs to be taken on and damn quick. And I'm hoping that they do, because. The public is actually behind this. They're willing to make some sacrifices to try and make the change, you know. And this is again another one of those fundamentals where I think that we're shifting. Scott Berry, everybody.
Good morning. I don't know about that. I don't know whether they're prepared to actually sacrifice enough. Politically, in this country, when you have an environment minister whose idea of saving things was vis-a-vis global warming was to protect the barrier reef with shade cloths, giant. So I think we've got a long way to go unless we have a change of government and see a former Midnight Oil front man in the job instead under the hammer about uranium.
Yeah. Okay, and because we got to go to break, but I think we should talk about Mr. Garrett. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Mr. Garrett. And we also have to set up We got Mr. Billy Shears. It's Friday, so of course we've got Billy Shears. And after doing the 4 weeks on Billy Joel, which was just, that was great fun, I think he's outdone himself with this one. Remembering Roy Orbison, and just another great pick. And I wonder where we're going to be 6 months from now, if Billy's going to be, you know, banging his head into the padded walls because he's going, what do I pick this week? Or is it just going to continue to be more and more magic? But anyway, that's going to be a lot of fun, so stick around. You're with John Fox here on Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, and it's Friday, and we're just kind of winging it. And, you know, it's Billy Shears Day, you know. It's not supposed to be so heavy all the time. But, you know, we'll talk about Mr. Peter Garrett, because there's some issues to be talked about that guy. So stick around. Scott Barry and I will talk about some environmental politics down here in Australia and former Midnight Oil. Nice one, Agnes. Well done. You found the Midnight Oil. Good girl. Thank you. And so stick around. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And my good mate Scott's hanging out here in the studio today. And so we started talking about, we've been doing Australian politics all day, and I know we're going off on a tangent, and but this is good. It's this is the way you learn about other cultures. So, and okay, Peter Garrett came in with great fanfare, and I was all part of that fanfare. And I mean, you've been closer to the guy than I ever have. And now he did end up having to do some compensation when he first got in, and one particular thing upset me, but I think that that's where he went, wait a minute, and I'm feeling that he's making a return. But do you think if Rudd gets in, and this is, you know, they're setting up for a possible real clash here, because we all know quite well what his true beliefs are when it comes to issues like uranium mining, you know, and such things, logging, militarization by other nations, other subjects like that. If he ends up being part of the front bench of the actual government, do you think, how effective do you think he can really be? And do you think he's ready for this thing? Because he's pretty green. What do you reckon?
Well, given that before he could actually run for office, he had to register to vote. Because he'd been off doing his rock thing for a while, and then he sort of forgot. Well, you know, yeah. So, I mean, he's pragmatic. Obviously, we've got a lot of coal, we've got a lot of uranium. We've got a lot of problems then, because, you know, people tend to use what they've got in abundance, and it has some dirty alternatives. But I think he's looking at the bigger picture, and I think there's enough opposition to nuclear in this country for it not to be too much of an issue, and then it really only becomes the moral question of, if people want to buy our uranium, then sure, your problem, kind of. We'll use some of its useful benefits, such as nuclear medicine and things like that, but pass, hopefully.
Well, okay, because there's something that even if someone could come to me and show me that, you know, one of these new, you know, reactor designs is just really, really bloody safe, and they've come up with some sort of reaction system that will neutralize the fuel rods, and, you know, something like that would take all worry away from me as far as that. I would still have a problem with the sale, because, and this is where that guy, there's a labor guy who seems like he comes across a little bit kind of like squeaky, weaselly, blonde guy, young guy, but he actually seems to know the books really well. He's always calling things to order in Parliament House. No. Starts with a D, I think, but anyway. You know, he says he made a comment regarding the uranium mining, and he says that is a situation where, okay, we might not know if there will be a meltdown, but you cannot guarantee me that it's not going to end up being in a weapon. And if we live in such a time of terrorism, you know, and we've already had the United States sell uranium and missile technology to India, who's not a signatory to the non-proliferation treaty, and, you know, what is it, Russia's sold to China. So all that's kind of like a waste of time. You know, I actually am on that side of things and just think that it's something that still is not worth the risk in more ways than one. There's more than one argument, I think, that should be going on there, that I'm kind of hoping that someone like Garrett might actually bring to the forefront a little bit, because I think he might have a little bit more of an understanding with that. You know, that it's not just... There are other issues that go along with that, and but I fear as well that he's going to end up, and I hope I'm wrong, that he's going to buckle, and I hope he buckles on everything but the environment and comes out swinging, but in that pragmatic way that, you know, when he's on, he's very good. But, you know, when he started doing some backpedaling on a few things, when, you know, he was trying to find how the wind was blowing for him, you know, whether he could veer off and go against his party leader, you know, kind of thing. And then suddenly he kind of went, you know, okay, we're allowed to have an actual debate over here. But whether he can get anywhere in that debate, I just really, really, I can only hope that it's going to be the public that's going to make it actually go that way. I think that's the only way that it can happen, that the public has to let whoever's in government just know, listen to the guy, this is what we want.
Well, we're still grappling with three mine policy too, and of course tailings do sort of eke their way into Kakadu, which is a World Heritage listing, so that's a problem in itself, obviously. South Australia's got plenty of it and nothing else. You know, we're grappling with issues as far as taking nuclear waste, because we've got a whole lot of wasteland and we'll bury it for you if you like. You know, there's all sorts of issues Peter Garrett's got. You know, let's not go with the US bases.
Yeah, and then unfortunately he put in a book. So that could definitely come back to, well, it already has come back to haunt him. In fact, that was the first thing that the right actually pulled out after he got in, to try and beat him on the head with. And I thought he, you know, especially for that early on in the piece, to have handled it so well. He kind of just went, he basically said, you know, well, you know, I'm also in a different position than I was in then, and, you know, as far as that, yeah, I will, but it's up, there are discussions to be had relating that and our autonomy, which I think is another issue that the Australian people are making some noise about. But we're about to hit the bottom of the hour break, and when we come back, we got Mr. Billy Shears doing a tribute to Roy Orbison, which is, I think you'll dig that. So stick around. You're listening to Foxed Up. My mate Scott Barry hanging out, Mr. B1 Louder himself. And so stick around. You're with Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back after this.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us there are things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop, right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Given everything that Bush, Cheney, Gonzalez, and Rove have pulled off already, it doesn't take a paranoid leap to ponder the possibility that they might do something even worse, like declare martial law, for instance. Now, I don't think this is going to happen unless, and the unless is that the United States is attacked again, this time by terrorists with a weapon of mass destruction. A few years back, General Tommy Franks, who led the initial push into Iraq, warned that this would happen. So too did Wayne Downing, who was Rice's deputy at the NSC. And last month, senior government officials, past and current, met to discuss emergency responses, and martial law came up again. Then, just last week, the White House released a directive entitled National Continuity Policy to prepare the government for a decapitating attack. The document gives enormous power to the Assistant to the President for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, who is now designated as the National Continuity Coordinator. And while the document says that ensuring the continued functioning of our form of government under the Constitution, including the functioning of the three separate branches of government, should be paramount, with this crowd, that's getting a little hard to believe. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fox Stuff.
Hold on.
We'll get Billy Shears queued up here in just a second. Sorry about that. But anyway, Billy's thing here.
We'll be back with Fox Up in just a moment. Until then, enjoy the music, and when we get back, we'll be doing Billy Shears. So just hold on.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. There we go, third night in a row, that bloody IP change. I'm gonna have to talk to somebody about that. That's just all new, suddenly out in the middle of nowhere. So, wow. Oh, that's frustrating. That's really, that made me mad. Wait till APEC. Oh my, I hadn't even gone there. I was actually thinking about that I should be wiring myself up with my little press pass for some of that and see what it's like for an alternative journalist to get in to some of the cordoned, you must be checked areas. I wonder what it would be like trying to go down there with a camera. I wonder if I'd be able to do it. Yeah, not even the chaser would dare, Scott Barry says. Great, great program, but you can actually you can videocast over on the ABC. It's pretty cool. So anyway, folks, without any further ado, with all that just nonsense, sorry about that with my IP. So without further ado, we're going to go to Shears Music for this week. So enjoy this. Mr. Roy Orbison, roll it, Agnes.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Roy Orbison remembered. Two of the biggest misconceptions about Roy Orbison is, number one, he was an albino, and number two, that he was blind. Well, neither one is true. He's not an albino, and he's not blind. Wearing the dark sunglasses was pure happenstance. He was on a flight to Alabama to perform a concert that evening. The sun was very bright. He took off his regular glasses and slipped on his sunglasses. Well, he left the plane, and it wasn't until he was about to go on stage that he realized that he had sunglasses on. He left his regular pair on the plane. Well, the show must go on, and then this is what happened.
And then the next day, he flew to Atlanta, New York, London, and opened the Beatle tour with the same pair of sunglasses. I was still worried about that, but no one sort of minded. And that tour was, well, it made the Beatles and myself in Europe and internationally, I guess. It was a really important tour. And with all these photographs around the world with sunshades, I was sort of stuck instant image with that. It wasn't something I designed or thought of. I'll just do this and be cool. It was a mistake.
Well, I guess you could say some of the best ideas just happened. As for his first number one record, it was a song he wrote for the Everly Brothers.
We were backstage, and I met the boys, and everybody backstage was pitching songs. They would sit down and say, sing four or five songs for the boys. And I said, I don't think I'll do that. I won't impose on them. I started to leave the dressing room, and they said, Roy, do you have any songs? I said, I've got one song. So I sat down and sang that for them, and they liked it very much and wrote the lyric down on the top of a shoebox. Took it back to Nashville and recorded it, and it was a code number one with All I Have to Do is Dream.
Mick Jagger and the Stones will remember Roy Orbison.
January, I come back to Australia, this time with the Rolling Stones. This is the year after the Beach Boy tour. And the Stones and I became friends and exchanged gifts and everything. They were pretty wild bunch, you know, still are a wild bunch. And they like Pretty Woman very well. You see, Pretty Woman with a beat that's like chump, 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 just like dum, 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 dum. I can't get no satisfaction. Anyway, they like Pretty Woman well enough to go back and write I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Some of the best songs ever written are those that come from the heart and from real life experiences. And no one does that better than Roy Orbison. He's going to explain why he wrote Crying. And when you hear the track, I want you to listen to the orchestration, the violins, and the use of the xylophone. It all comes together for a truly beautiful song.
Crying was on the heels of Running Scared, that it was number one, and then the next record was Crying. On the other side of Crying was Candyman, and it was just a down-home blues thing. And then I was a bit afraid of crying professionally because you didn't in the industry follow a ballad with a ballad. But then I said, well, I don't care what that's all about. So Crying was about it was a true story. I had seen a girlfriend of mine that I'd broken up with, and I waved to her, and I should have driven the car right over to where she was, but I played it cool and drove on down the street about a block and started big old tears in my eyes, you know. And then when I got old enough to relate the story the thought was that I was all right for a while till you made contact again, till you saw her or she called you on the phone or whatever. And in this case, I saw her. And so it was a feeling that it was not difficult to write. It was difficult to conjure that song up. It's a totally true song, because when that song came out, I don't think anyone had accepted the fact that a man should be able to cry when he wants to cry.
I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight as you stopped to say hello. Oh, you wished me well. You couldn't tell that I've been crying. So long, left me standing all alone, alone and crying, 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 crying. It's hard to understand, but the touch of your hand can start me crying. I thought that I was over you, but it's true, so true. I love you even more than I did before. But darling, what can I do? Oh,
Yeah, I used to be asked how would I like to be remembered, and then my answer was that I would just like to be remembered. And I think maybe if I made a contribution to the music scene, the music business, some form of a contribution that maybe brought a little happiness to someone or held a few things together, then that would be great.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Thanks, Billy. Thanks a bunch. That was very, very cool. What a cool... just... he was not an albino and he wasn't blind. I'd forgotten about that kind of silliness. And the sunglass thing, I had never heard that bit. I never knew that. That he just left him on the plane. Very, very cool, man. Thank you very much for that. What will you do to top yourself next week? I wouldn't even venture to make a suggestion. But anyway, my mate Scott snuck out during that and headed off. He went out and was mixing a local thing tonight and pulled in afterwards. He was just up the road, up at a place called the Bridge Hotel, which I've done gigs at many, many times. It's one of those things that's, you know, it's all about the dank. it's a shoebox hole, but for some reason, it's one of those places that it's very vibey. Very, very vibey. It's nice. You end up setting up your monitor console. If you're running monitors, you know, on stage audio, you're actually on the floor. The stage is at about 4 foot off the ground, and you end up setting up your console in the, you know, 4 foot wide hallway that is the entry to the women's lavatory. Crammed in as tight as you can, stacked up to the ceiling. You can't see, you can't hear, but yet it usually just goes off. But I've seen many a monitor guy fired at that venue. Ooh. I actually had a guy that I worked for say to me, and one of the things about this club that I always liked doing, that I did like doing for a while, they had a policy. If you played there on the weekend, you'd play both Friday and Saturday night. It wasn't a huge place. So, but they could get, you know, get your money out of it. You know, you could have an easy weekend, fill it out both nights, you know, and you actually get to leave the show up overnight, which is a real kind of pleasure when you're doing that kind of gig, you know. At the end of the night, you just, like, power it down, put the stealable stuff away, and then come back the next afternoon and just fire it up. It's a completely different world than unloading trucks and doing all that before you can actually get on with doing the actual gig you were paid to do. Oh. Anyway. You know, we've been talking about... There's been all this news about the bees disappearing. I don't have anything in front of me at the moment, but I've been meaning to mention, if y'all hadn't heard, that, you know, there was talk about that cell phone towers were doing it, right? And Gail had been saying to me, she goes, I don't believe it. And she was just kind of on about it. And the newest reports have been that it's very well genetically modified crops are responsible for changing something like the acidity level in their fat content or something, which changes the protein in the honey or some roddy rye, I can't remember exactly what it is. And that's what's making them all just scatter off and mysteriously disappear and die, and colonies are just disappearing. That it's an unforeseen effect of some sort of genetically modified crop. And, you know, it's kind of like there was a piece, I don't remember where, but, you know, in amongst the mad surfing that says, you know, maybe it's time to stop making fun of them. The greenies are right. And whenever, and, you know, the greenies and the hippies were right. When it came to the war, they were right. When it came to the environment, they were right. When it, you know, when it came to this, they were right. Stop fighting them and thank them. And I'm also told that maybe possibly this was all part, also in part due to some spray for bugs in hives. That wouldn't surprise me either, you know. And I think that they're going to find that there's, you know, probably a few things that could cause this stuff, you know, and it's probably all related to some funky engineering of some sort, you know. Why we have to make it so difficult. It's just... the whole GM thing. There was even... suddenly a flood of stuff comes to me. There was a piece in the Sydney Morning Herald or The Age where Australia's top scientist says that those against GM products are dangerous, undereducated, biased, and something else. That was all really kind of over the top, and I just want to know where in his employment chain of events does Monsanto come in? I'll have to look that one up and bring that to you next week. It's kind of it's a little bit disturbing when we know plenty, and then you look at things that like happened with the cat food in the United States. And then suddenly that stuff that, some got into feed for animal consumption animals. Oops. How'd that happen? Oops. So sorry. Forgive us. Oh, it's in a little more than we thought. Oh, so sorry. That is... we're crossing a line into, like, really, really creepyville there. That's, you know, getting to the point where we won't be able to turn this back when it comes to how the run-on effects that could very well be down the line, and when it really poses no benefit. And, you know, is this the benchmark that we need to use for everything? Does it actually provide a benefit that doesn't cost more in a negative of some sort, in an abuse, in a consumption? You know, I really think we need a whole new paradigm when it comes to the way that we make our decisions. It'll make the whole thing a whole lot simpler. That's all I can say. Oh, my. Sometimes it just feels just so unbelievably huge when you look at what could happen down the line, and then just the legal ramifications, you know, the stuff that I covered a couple of weeks ago about the whole owning of the pig DNA or whatever it was. With Monsanto, no food will be grown that we don't own. That's not a good thing. That is not a good thing. You know, and the bees go, we got a problem. Bees go, we got a big problem. Just like the ectoplasm disappearing. That is scary stuff. So anyway, folks, we're going to wrap it up for the weekend. And stick around. I believe we got following me. I don't know if I'm right. Do we have Mr. Tony Seaton and America back on track? How cool is that? Guy's a bit of journalism legend there, really. You know? He produced Barbara Wawa. Barbara Wawa! If you were a twee, what kind of twee would you be? But nah, awesome, 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 awesome. So anyway, folks, stick around. What do we got later today? Dr. Bill O'Brien, and we got Guy James, and then we got Bob Kincaid. How cool. So thanks to Agnes for producing today. a bit torturous at moments with IPs resetting. I'm going to shoot them. And thanks to our bloggers and our mods and everybody in the chat room. Have a good weekend. And as we say, and thank you, Scott Barry, for hanging out and let me stick the microphone in his face a few times. That was kind of fun. New tangents to go off on. So thank you to B1 Louder, Scotty. Thanks for the music. Thank you to Billy Shears. You so rock. Thank you so much, man. Thanks to you. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dog dish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating than face licking it clean and admitting when I'm selfish. And I tell you that I'm suffering from the worst type of loneliness, the loneliness of being misunderstood. More poignantly, the loneliness of being afraid to allow myself to be understood.
Class he will take. However, his audience on his television stations are the working class, usually. Or at least that's who he thinks he's going for. But, you know, it's classic Murdoch. And you know, but yeah, but thanks to Daryl Mason for, and it's a great post. You should go and check it out. There's some great comments. And there's one commenter who's on a bunch that if you stroll through the Australian left blogs, you'll come across this guy that goes by Surly Old Bastard. And he says, Murdoch doesn't give a shite about criticism anymore. He says he can make a buck or a billion out of becoming a green corporation, but says he will reduce his corporation's massive carbon footprint by spending a few million burying up wind farms and buying up wind farms in India. Watch as his propaganda organs prepare the public for the introduction of a global carbon tax. Stuff like this: your electricity bill is tripled, but you're saving the world. You're only allowed to use the aircon 3 days a week, but you're saving the world. Your airfares for your first overseas holiday just went up by 80%, but you're saving the world. Carbon tax, it's going to become the world currency, whether you like it or not. What Rupert wants, Rupert gets. And that's usually about true. Another guy says, it's not the beer, but the